Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, we spend so much time in the office, late nights, and even weekends. There's never enough time at home with family and friends, right? Well, there is a way to strike a balance. Get your work done and spend more time at home with GoToMyPC. With just a click, you can instantly access your office computer from any internet connection. GoToMyPC, brought to you by Citrix, is the easiest remote access service available. Improve your work life and really create some balance with GoToMyPC. And in fact, you can try it free for 30 days. For this special offer, you have to visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free trial. And welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Andrew Horowitz here. It is February. We're off to a rolling start. The markets, the economy. What fun, what fun. Well, this week is the week of the Money Show up in Orlando, and I'm going to be speaking at a couple events and sitting in on a bunch more. I'm looking forward to spending some time listening to some of the experts and some of the financial gurus of the world to find out what they think and how they think is going to what we're going to see moving forward. They do say that what happens in January does go with the market, it seems, you know, but that's not always the case. Let's not really rely on history as the only barometer. And matter of fact, I would venture to say that with some of the stimulus talk that's going on, and even with the breakdown with the Republicans in the House with the vote that did pass, but without any Republican support at all, there seems to be a reality check that we need to have, because the stimulus package will pass. It may not be the package that we want. It may not even be something we want at all. But the fact is, it's going to pass, and that means there's going to be, over the next year or so, a tremendous amount of push, and I guess we're going to be flush with money of some sort, whether it's going to be directly in infrastructure builds, or whether it's going to be in technology, whether it's going to be in tax cuts, or some kind of other stimulus in the areas of healthcare, or whatever it is. There's going to be a tremendous amount of money that's pushed into our economy. Now, I could sit here and rant and unrave, and I'll tell you that it's going to cause hyperinflation, and it's going to be one of the worst things that's going to be inherited by our children in the years to come. And I'll go through all that, but really what we're focusing on today and what we're focusing on here at the Disciplined Investor Podcast is all about, how do we make money from all this, right? How do we save from being just destroyed in this situation, but how do we make money in this market? Good news is, I hope you've been following along and keeping safe, because January was down about 8.5% on the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ looked just as awful. The international markets looked pretty bad itself. Knock wood, we were up 2.5% plus or so. For the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, we finished the year at, I think, 3.5 up was the actual number. And we're at an all-time high right now. And that came from a lot of juggling the portfolios and a lot of movement in and out of various markets. Shorting, last week, took a big short on the SKF, the ProShares Inverse Double Financials, once we saw that the good bank, bad bank situation really wasn't working out well, and then pulled it on Friday. Overall, I think that the object right now is a mixture of safety, but I think we're looking at the potential to watch very carefully if we can hold some of the current levels, which probably not going to hold right now. But, you know, if we can kind of get a basing going, we may see a little bit of an uptick here, but we can do it carefully. Don't just absolutely throw things in the market right now. You have to be a stock picker. You have to choose your battles. You have to have hedging. You have to have sell stops, and you have to do more than just simply buy and hold. I'm going to release a little gift to you in the next week or so, about a week, I guess, that is going to be a song that we wrote, a parody we wrote on the idea of advisors who are recommending buy and holds. Already people are probably booing, and I got this advisor that write me telling me that I'm just an idiot, that buy and hold, people need to, you know, stay in the markets and don't scare them. I'm telling them the wrong information. Well, I'm sorry, fellas, 8.5% down on the S&P 500, which is your benchmark. And, you know, if you're an advisor telling clients to stick around and stick it out, I just can't agree with it. I'm sorry. for those of you out there who believe that, you know, that's the only way, I apologize to you as well. But I just can't, I don't know. I can't do it with my money. Let's put it that way. And I wouldn't do it with clients' money. But a couple of things I do want to mention to you, a couple of housekeeping points. And then we're going to get to our guest today. We have two great guests, as a matter of fact, today lined up. We have Bill Fleckenstein, who is writes the Contrarian Chronicles for MSN Money. Plus, he's a hedge fund manager on the short side. And he's actually giving up his short hedge fund. I'm going to ask him about that. I want to find out what's going on with why he's doing that, because I'm kind of curious what the story is there. I have a couple of ideas why that may be, but I'm thinking there's something interesting going to be found there. Smart guy. We've had him on before. And James Altshuler, which he's with TheStreet.com and with StockPicker.com. He's going to be on as well. I've never really talked with him. I talked to him once, I think, before, and he's referenced our blog and things in the past, but really never had a sit-down talking to him about anything of substance. And I want to really pick his brain because his site is really cool, and he has some great writing, and he's involved with the RealMoney.com, Real Money Action Alerts and all that with Jim Cramer's company, TheStreet.com. And I think that he's going to have some interesting insight as well. I can't wait to talk to him. But a couple of housekeeping things really quickly. Number one, hopefully you're going to be at the Money Show. I'll see you this week. That's first of all. Second of all, I want to let you know that the report that we put out, the tech stocks for an Obama recovery, I'm going to leave. You just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll leave it right at the top there on the top few posts that you can check out. And it's in the top there. So you can just click on it and just put your information in. It will just send you a copy of that. It's about a 10-page report or so about which stocks may benefit in an Obama recovery. Remember, something's going to happen. It may not happen today, but there is this money that's going to be pumped into the system. So we have to be aware of that and keep on top of that. The second thing is, this is pretty cool, actually. For the last, 8 months, 9 months, we have not really, we've decided not to take on international clients outside the U.S. because we had some question whether or not there was compliance availability, and we kind of stick by the books, and we're real compulsive about that and making sure that all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed. But we did get approval right now for international clients. And I know there's been a lot. I've had a lot of emails. I've had a lot of people asking me, can't you manage money for us in the TDI Managed Growth Strategy? And yes, the answer is we are taking in international clients. There will be a post up and there will be some information in this particular show notes. And you'll also have the opportunity to get that on the website. So if you are an international client, not Canada, and we have to be careful some areas, other countries, the UK, there's a few others that are problematic. But if you want to, send us the information. We'll see if we can hook you up and get you started in this process. And finally, I wanted to mention that it's on the same note, but thanks for buying the book, by the way. I got some great comments lately. Amazon.com lowered the price to like $13. So if you want to pick that up, Disciplined Investor, that's sure to save you a couple of bucks in this market and make you a few bucks also. But if you want to do a test drive, we have a private blog that we have on the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where we write things all the time to our clients. We have a 10-day free test drive, because if you don't know exactly what we're doing and you don't understand what we're doing, but you want to kind of see what's happening, get a bird's eye view, and really kind of be in there and understand what we're buying, what we're selling, how we're doing it, 10-day free trial. I'll put that up as well on the site, so you can just grab that, and we'll be happy to provide that for you and give you all the information that's available there. So I think we covered that. I do want to mention that starting off in February, we have a lot of economic news that's coming out. Please be very aware. And if you do follow me on Twitter or follow me on Facebook, whatever it is, we are posting information continually on what we're doing, or at least some of our ideas on economics, et cetera. And this is the last week of the MSN Strategy Lab, last one week or two weeks. We're up about 14.5% right now. I'm going to make a couple of moves next week that I think could be interesting. We're going to implement some of the technology stocks that we outlined for the Obama recovery. So take a look at that and watch that, because I'll show you how we're going to buy those and using that edge strategy that we utilize. Let's see. Oil, interesting. We still like oil a lot. Short treasuries we like a lot. Staying in and out and riding the wave on the hedging strategies. And continue to like things like Baidu is working out really well for us. Got a big gain on that recently. And the agricultures are just awful. But I am starting to really like the ags. I really am. I think there's some opportunity here. Nobody's slowing down. And I am starting to fixate on China. I know that sounds outside the bounds of what I usually talk about, but I am really developing a real interesting love affair with the opportunity for China to pull out of this, especially if they keep on pointing a finger at us and saying that we're the ones that have fault and don't buy our treasuries and don't do business with us. And if they put all that money back into their own economy, just think about what that could do. So we're kind of very bullish right now on China. And you'll probably find out more about that if you go over to that test drive. You'll find out because we're talking about that there and having discussion back and forth. A lot of transparency, a lot of different things that you're probably aware of or seen before. So I hope that we're bringing something. I hope we're bringing something good to you. Anyway, let's get back to the guest today because I want to give a call. Let's get first on. Our first guest is going to be a discussion with James Altshuler, who's going to be coming up. We'll get on the phone with him. And we get right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing.
Welcome back. We're with James Altshuler, and he is president and founder of Stock Picker. You know him. He's on thestreet.com. He's written all over the place. He's a great guy. He's written many books, and we're really pleased to have you here today, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So kind of give us some backdrop of Stock Picker, because it's become pretty popular, you know, this whole idea of, you know, individuals, you know, figuring out if they can make it as an advisor, or at least themselves show the world that they can do some work as a picker of stocks, and also the idea that it creates a bit of community, right?
Exactly. So what happened was, is the whole background. What happened was my business partner, Dan Kelly, and I, we actually wanted to invest with this strategy of piggybacking the picks of the best investors. So if Warren Buffett, for instance, owns Goldman Sachs, we would buy Goldman Sachs. Now, fortunately, we did not do that this year. It would be 50% down or more. Mm-hmm. But that was the basic idea. And we got an opportunity. Someone wanted to put between $1 and $200 million into this strategy. But there was a lot of terms and conditions. And ultimately, what we decided was, you know what? We have all these different ideas about these different investment strategies. We were also running a fund of hedge funds at the time. Let's just open it all up. Let's just make it all free and give out all the information as possible. So we put up all the portfolios of all the super investors, like maybe the, you know, top 300 or 400 hedge funds out there. We put their portfolios up on the site, stockpicker.com, and that's stockpicker without an E, so it's like tick R. And then we also introduced this area called Stock Picker Answers, which allows people to ask questions about stocks or investments, and anybody could answer. Additionally, people would put up their own portfolios, and other people could comment on them. So it was this whole idea that, at the very least, community can help you hopefully make good decisions, but at the very least, avoid making some bad decisions.
Right.
And
right.
I think we achieved our goal. Just the community alone, you know, some people are focused on risk more than others. You get to see the general behavior and patterns of others, and what we found was that the people whose voices sort of rose to the top tended to be the ones that were the most sincere and often offered the best guidance. And it was also a place where people like Jim Cramer would directly interact with essentially a lot of his readers and fans from the TV show. They would all go with his Stock Picker because they knew that was the place where they could find Jim and other people.
So let me ask you a question. I'm going to get myself in really hot water here, so let me just kind of get it out, all right?
All right, I'll throw cold water on you afterwards.
Thanks. I've been really critical of the quote-unquote great investors.
Right.
I've been really critical because on one hand, I get it. I totally get it. I understand where the great investors, I understand where the great minds, they're wealthier than I will ever be. But my critical point here is that, you know, obviously we can pinpoint to the Warren Buffett, you know, buy American and buy now in October, right? We could talk about I'll put this in a different category, but the Susie Orman who says buy and hold and never sell. You know, we could look at all the various, you know, the Ken Huebner who just got totally obliterated last year. And some of that has to do with the fact like a Ken Huebner in a mutual fund, obviously he had no control of what he could do inside of a mutual fund. I mean, he was kind of handcuffed, right? And he got beat up and he was standing in a corner and he was just beating the hell out of him. But Warren right. Buffett, you know, is he, I'm asking the question, I'm not posing this as a point, I'm asking a question because I can get, no, I'm telling you, I'll get the answer to email. Is Warren Buffett really a great investor or is he a great businessman?
Well, he is both. I mean, look, we can all judge him from the past 3 months where he's made some, what seems like in the short term, bad decisions. You know, history will tell. We have no idea at the current point, but you know, you look at, you have a 50-year track record there. And look, I've written articles on both sides of the issue on Warren Buffett. But at the end of the day, he's built up a phenomenal business, and he has a phenomenal investment track record. Like, right. Increased book value every year for, you know, either from his hedge fund or from Berkshire Hathaway, he increased his assets every year, except for maybe two over the past 50 years. And that's just incredibly difficult.
Yeah, well, a lot of it had to do with, I mean, he has a lot of, you know, it's inside of his portfolio. It looks disgusting. If you would just look at it and not know that it was Berkshire Hathaway, you would be horrified, right? I mean, it's pretty
right.
ugly. It's pretty ugly.
Yes.
You know, but, and he has a lot of financials, and that was a really great call because a lot of the financials and the growth of the, you know, essentially the growth of America from the 50s till now was all about, you know, wealth and growth and all that. So who else is a great investor? Again, I'm putting Ken Huebner aside because, you know, because of the fact he had this handicap, in my opinion, being in a hedge fund. But, you know,
yes.
who else do you have on the top of your list as a great investor that's maybe different than a Warren Buffett?
Well, I think Jim Simons from Renaissance Technologies is a phenomenal investor. And, you know, so that this is a fund gone up about 40% per year since 1990, give or take. And
that's it?
You know, excuse me?
That's it? Only 40%?
the Jim Simons.
Oh, no, I'm kidding. I meant about the 40% per year.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, he's one of the best. Like, and obviously, if you can compound at 40% a year, he probably started with close to nothing. He has billions in his pocket now. And then Stevie Cohen from SAC Capital.
Mm-hmm.
And, Stevie Cohen's a great example where this is a guy who I think his main fund was about 10% down in the year. So you can say, oh, my gosh, how could that be a great investor? He was 10% down in the year. Well, the market was 37% down in the year. And here's the story that sort of, you know, well-known among the traders is that in mid-October, Stevie Cohen walked out onto his trading floor and he said, everybody, sell all of their stuff. I'll see you in January. And so even though he was down, he didn't try to, like, make back his losses or anything. He did the smart decision. The greatest investor ever, arguably, did not understand what was happening in the market. So he said, let's just cool down. Even though we're not going to make any money this year, we're going to lose money. So we don't take any fees. Sell everything. And
that was brilliant. That was brilliant. And you know what? What's interesting about that is that 10%, in my opinion, 10% is the new zero for 2008. In other words, if you were able to capture only 10% down, you're a king.
That's right. And, you know, look, everybody had a hard time. Fidelity was, you know, all their funds were down quite a bit. All the major mutual fund families were down quite a bit. Everybody had a tough time. Obviously, we all know about Bill Miller and, like, Mason, the poor guy. The stories have been, you know, calling for his funeral ever since. He's down so huge this year. But, you know, there's always next year.
There's always next year, but unfortunately,
wait,
hold on. This is next year for Mr. Cohen. This is next year, in a way, for Mr. Buffett, clearly too. No question about that. For Mr. Miller, on the other hand, I will contend that next year and the year after, he is going to have to do something extraordinary, to make it back. Now, if he just sits on everything and it comes back and the laughs on us in the end, because somehow this whole Citibank and this whole thing and all this was ever fixed, great. But, I mean, we're talking the worst fund of the year and doubling down and basically going after the worst stuff when it was still not even at the worst point. So,
well, you know, he had a problem in that his whole, you know, what really worked well in the 80s and the 90s, and particularly in the 90s, was that when stocks went down, you should buy them when they were going down really fast. And there's this whole mean reversion strategy. Which, look, worked like clockwork all through the 90s, which that was Bill Miller's career. So when Fannie Mae goes down 50% in 3 days, what does Bill Miller do? He does what he's always done since he bought AOL in 1994 and watched it go up 800%. He bought Fannie Mae, and then it went down another 90%. So that whole strategy stopped working for essentially a three-month period. And look, it's still probably not working.
Right.
And, you know, all the rules are out the window now. So what rules are in? Well, you know, at the end of the day, I think Warren Buffett's approach will work. Now, maybe not with these financials he owns, but maybe the Ben Graham style of owning companies with solid assets that have cash flows that are somewhat predictable. And even that is hard to say because we're in the worst recession in 70 years. But, you know, maybe there's some ways to still game it.
So let me ask you, the market, considering where we are, generally speaking, I don't mean exactly today or whatever, but the market. Are we fairly valued now, or is still a tremendous amount of optimism or a tremendous amount of despondency involved in kind of where we are now? Because let me just put one more thing in. When I look at S&P earnings and projections, the S&P 500, I'm like, you know, if this is the worst recession since blank blank, these numbers still look extraordinarily elevated compared to where they should be.
But, and Andrew, you're exactly right. Right now, things are really bad. And without any intervention, things will even get so much worse, it's unbearable. But let's take a look, though. We had $1 trillion of the stimulus passed yesterday. That we won't see dollar one of that in the economy for, 6 to 18 months. So, and there's no way to predict the results of what the stimulus is going to do in the economy once it hits. Now, the nation's GDP is $10 trillion. So $1 trillion, you figure, oh, well, that's only 10%. But that's not really true, because every dollar that goes into the economy, there's what's called the multiplier effect. It could go, you could see that dollar pass from hand to hand, 5 to 15 times. So that $1 trillion of stimulus might actually show up with $10 trillion worth of extra GDP over the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, but Jim, the problem with the stimulus plan is what was supposed to be the stimulus plan. We don't know what's going to come out yet, but what was supposed to be the stimulus plan, 800, a trillion, I don't care what number you throw on it, but the stimulus plan that was supposed to be some kind of an FDR-like program that was breaking rocks and making money for doing it concept, fixing up the infrastructure and all that, has turned into a little bit of a different situation. We have a ton of tax breaks, which I don't know how that helps somebody out of work. We have only partial of the money that was going into a new deal kind of infrastructure build out, which, by the way, some of that now we are terribly pissing off China, and now Putin's involved and he's pissed off, and we're doing this Buy America thing on steel, which is absolutely contrary to competitiveness, and it's just a really what's happening. It's like he's imploding.
You're totally right, but my argument is it's still $1 trillion. It's still $1 trillion of the economy. You could say this entire $1 trillion is going to go towards making toilets, and it wouldn't matter, because the guys who make the toilets are then going to go buy homes and cars. The guys who build the homes are then going to go out and buy, diamonds for whoever. Mm-hmm. And eventually, these dollars get trickled through the economy.
So it's trillion dollars
that didn't exist before that will make its way into the economy.
Okay, so here's two questions. Number one, you've been to Japan?
No.
You haven't been to Japan? Well, if you go to Japan, you tell me where you'd buy your toilets from. I am telling you, you would buy a Toto toilet from Japan. They are the coolest toilets you've ever seen in your life. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about and you think I'm insane, let's just say they have built-in things. They have built-in warmers. They have built-in noise, because if you don't want to make any noise for the stalls next to you. And they have even music involved, fragrances. It's the most incredible toilets you've ever seen. But aside from that, I'm telling you, it's cool. They also have the open pits that you go into with what they call the traditional toilets, which is a kind of a total juxtapose of the same situation. But here, $1 trillion. Now, do you think that the tax rebates are still considered, in your discussion, quality stimulus?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And then,
Japan's totally different from here. I mean, there you had historically like a culture of savers. I mean, they would get their dollar and put it under the mattress. We spend. The U.S. spends their money. Like, you give me $100, I'm spending $105 of it. Yeah. Now, yes, that's what got us into trouble, but it's still short-term is going to be the injection that gets the economy at least to have positive GDP.
Now, so many people...
That's what we care about right now.
Well, I know we care about that, but let's just think for a second. People have been burned, and really burned bad, right?
Yes.
People are hurting pretty badly. I mean, pockets of places are okay, but I'm saying there are places between their house value is down to just horrible, their bills are mounting, they can't pay it, they're out of a job, their 401k plan looks disgusting, and you're telling me that they're going to get some money and spend it, or they're going to bank some of it?
They're going to do both.
Okay.
I mean, again, we've never, as a country, we've never saved, so maybe our things are different right now, but chances are, when $1 trillion is a lot of money. So we've never had stimulus like this before. We have 0% interest rates and $1 trillion. And not only that, every other government around the world is running stimulus programs.
Clearly.
So the problem we have is not that everybody's going to suddenly, crawl under their beds and hide their money. The problem we have is that the economy is going to be too strong and there's going to be hyperinflation.
Right.
Now, that's a serious problem. But the thinking is, we'll worry about it when we get to that, because right now we're in a deflationary spiral.
Yeah, because we're not worrying about much right now. So obviously our commodities should do much better, and we should do a lot better in a lot of areas. But then let me ask you this. Aside from hyperinflation, let's just talk for a second. First of all, $1 trillion, just for a moment, $1 trillion is a lot of money. I think we're very much desensitized to the word billion and trillion. It's quadrillion, sextrillion. It's really an enormous sum of money. Okay? and you know that we actually have bailed out the banks to 350, and we don't know where it is, and another 350 is going in, and it's like, wait a minute, where did that money really, I mean, not that they stole it or anything like that, but that's a massive amount of money. That's spooky. And
yeah,
my bigger question is, so now if we're talking about a billion there, a trillion here, but seriously, where's that money coming from? I mean, where's the effect of this? It has to be paid back, right? China's pissed off.
It doesn't all have to be paid back.
Okay.
It's, you know, we run a printing press. So this is the problem with the hyperinflation, is that we have a printing press also that prints money. And as long as there's deflation, we can essentially print or borrow, because we don't, you know, yes, there's going to be inflation later, or at least, at the very least, there's going to be reflation, but we only care about deflation right now. That's the evil of deflation.
So why don't we just print up a god-awful amount of money, forget a trillion, let's make it 10 trillion, pass it out and have a goddamn party. Seriously.
Well, that's essentially what they're doing. So a trillion is, you know, of course we can now say 10 trillion, but a trillion was 10 times more than anybody thought was ever needed. I mean, back when all this started, let's talk about mid-07. Everybody thought that the max pain across the entire economy was going to be about $100 billion,
right.
$150 billion.
Right.
That was going to be the percentage of subprime mortgages that were going to default.
Right.
Well, it turned out to be so much greater because of all the deleveraging that occurred. So a trillion now. Look, it might be more already, but when you add in the commercial lending facility and other aspects, $8 trillion has gone out there. That's how big the stimulus has really been so far.
So are you bullish on the markets now?
Right now, I'm personally mostly out of the markets, but I would say that between now and like mid-09, that's the time to be scaling into the markets. Because the stimulus is we're gonna feel the stimulus in 2010, and the market's gonna anticipate it 6 months in advance. So you really wanna start kind of legging into the market right now.
Right now? Now?
Right now.
Okay. So a lot of people...
Am I calling a bottom? No way. Like, S&P could go to 600. But that doesn't matter. You're not selling the next day, but you want to make sure you're in there before the market really starts to anticipate what's going to happen. Because then the S&P is immediately going to like 1,000, 1,100 or higher.
Right. So, you know, I don't think... I agree with you that nobody... You know, a lot of times I've been seeing this market that, you know, investors or money managers, whoever it is, have been very giddy about things, right? They just kind of like get anticipated about things. They, you know, do it, and then they all of a sudden it takes you out on the other side. We see earnings all of a sudden for one company that's really good, but obviously we're watching the painful unemployment situation, you know, this monster just grow.
Very painful.
Very painful. Yeah. And this whole idea, and I think the funniest thing, I mean, it's not funny about unemployment, but, it, you know, interesting thing is, you know, how Obama first President Obama was coming out with, you know, we're going to save 2.5 million jobs, and it was 3 million jobs, now 3.5, now we're up to 4 million jobs. It's like, wait a minute, where's that, where, you know, and I don't see how that happens with the stimulus package, but that's a different discussion. Job save, I don't understand that at all, but I understand the stimulus to the economy. So in closing, a couple of basic points here. So mutual funds. So you've been around a while and you've watched mutual funds. Are their days kind of over? I don't know if you're involved with any. I don't know what your relationship is with any of them personally. But is there kind of, you know, is it done?
Not necessarily. Like, look, even that brings a lot of questions. Like, what's the most efficient way to diversify in this market? Like, a lot of people aren't qualified to pick their own stocks, and a lot of people don't even know what ETFs they go into. Do mutual funds charge a lot of fees? Yes. I'm not really a judge, you know, of a few percentage points here and there. The market's like 50% down, depending on the index, from its highs. So a little fees here and there is not going to kill anybody.
Right. No, I understand that.
The important thing is to be in a diversified group of stocks. And look, the professional money managers probably will do better than the non-professionals in the years going forward. Did they do better over the last year? Probably not in many cases. But in the long run, you know, they at least match the market.
But you know what? But I'm on a one-man campaign and a crusade that I am tired of just matching the market. And what I mean by that is, you know, I don't know if you're a big fan of these lazy portfolios or not, but I'm kind of like kind of disgusted about that. The idea that it's so easy.
Yeah, just, and I agree. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, you know, the idea that it's so easy, a monkey could do it, just pick out a few index funds and leave it alone forever. I don't think that's a good idea. I just don't.
I agree. I think you know, the best thing to do is to be, you know, knowledgeable and actually pick stocks that will match the demographic trends that are going to be happening in the United States and the world over the next 10, 20 years.
Right. So are you a fan of Harry Dent? You know Harry Dent?
No. I don't really know. I don't follow it.
Harry, he's a big...
Oh, you know, he's the doom and gloom guy.
Well, there's a lot of those, yes. But he's a nice fellow. But nonetheless, he's a demographic economist. It's kind of cool, you know, how he tracks that whole thing. And yes, at this point, he is gloomy, I'll tell you. But he hasn't always been. He'll be.
But there are simple things, though, like, you know, China, whether or not China goes through a recession or not, if China is on a path of growth over the next century.
I'm glad you brought that up because that is, I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking a lot about that. And I've been thinking about.
China needs copper. China can't produce any copper. They have no copper in China. So where are they going to get it? Well, there's a lot of copper here in the United States. You have Freeport Macro and the FCX, which makes copper and is also a good inflation hedge because there might be hyperinflation because they also produce gold. So that's an example play where I think the demographics over the next 5, 10, 15 years, it's like a tidal wave on the side of FCX.
Right. I mean, there's not only that. I think there's an interesting play here because if, in fact, they get protectionism in China or have more or something like that of any kind of discussion or even hating, you know, U.S., they have a lot of money in the banks and they got to do something with it. And it seems that if they turn it internally, there's a great opportunity, if nothing else, by the vastness and the mass of people that are there, that what that powerhouse just from an eating standpoint and a consumption standpoint, which this is kind of like a replay, in my opinion. I don't see any unless something really bizarro happens, more than we're dealing with now, that this is a replay of maybe 15 years ago. We can get into where we were 15 years ago, where Jim Rogers was talking about the only place to be and the opportunity to be in these foreign lands is kind of coming back full circle, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right, well, what else?
Everything's probably sold off too much.
Yep, I would tend to agree with that point there. So in closing, you mentioned that this is going to work or hopefully work eventually, this whole thing. What can people do to check out your site and the best way to get the information to find out about you? You have a couple of books out. You're a prolific writer. We'll put all that information on the site in the notes for this podcast. But what do you think people should do? The first thing, how can they get involved with Stock Picker?
Well, check out StockPicker.com and RealMoney.com. I do a lot of writing on RealMoney.com, which is where Jim Cramer does all his writing as well. And also my recent book, The Forever Portfolio.
I like that, The Forever Portfolio. It sounds so nice. It sounds so friendly. It does.
I'm just saying. I'm a friendly guy.
I understand. Well, I look forward to seeing you at The Money Show, and some people may be listening to this actually at The Money Show, so I appreciate it. You're stopping by on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Excellent, Andrew. Thanks a lot.
Well, that was an interesting call. That was an interesting discussion. James Altshuler over at the Stock Picker. I encourage you to check that out. We're going to take a quick break so we can set this up again and get on the phone with Bill Fleckenstein. And don't go anywhere. We'll be back in 10 seconds on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to another great section here on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We are with one of my favorite guys. He is a tremendously smart individual and somebody hopefully you're reading on MSN on the Contrarian Chronicles. His name is Bill Fleckenstein. And for a long time, Bill's been, I think he is still pretty negative on the markets and on the economic outlook because of what's gone on by our government. And I want to ask him a few questions, particularly about some of his banking issues that are going on right now. So thanks for joining us, Bill.
Thank you for having me.
So we have a lot on the table right now. We have a good bank, bad bank thing. We have Obama bill that looked like it started out to be something interesting, and I'm not sure it doesn't look like it's as interesting as it was and as helpful. Markets are saying it may not be. What's your take on the whole economic outlook right now as compared to maybe what you thought it was going to be when Obama was really, you know, pumping it into to, you know, become president? Now he is president. Do we have the same benefit of this change happening?
Well, first of all, I have been expecting the economic environment to be quite difficult, and I have been very worried about the employment situation, which I've been writing and discussing now for many, many months. And it was one of the chapters in the book that I wrote in Greenspan's Bubbles, The Age of Ignorance of the Federal Reserve. One of the chapters I wrote had to deal with the fact that in the last upcycle, which was the real estate bubble, 40% of the jobs, or plus or minus, were created by the real estate bubble. So we didn't really have any sustainable job creation. My concern has been with it when this credit bubble burst, jobs would be very difficult to come by. And that is playing out, unfortunately. I never believed that Obama was going to be able to do much of anything to change this. I hoped that whatever changes they made or policies they pursued would be helpful, though that's not a foregone conclusion. We don't really know what they're going to try to do on a good bank, bad bank program. you know, but at the end of the day, I think we do know that the Fed and the government are going to try to stop this collapse that is underway, that's been underway. I don't think that they really can, because basically we lived beyond our means and took equity out of our houses and our businesses by levering them up, and we spent the money. And there's a $1 or $2 trillion hole in the banking system. To the extent that the government can find a way to plug that, they're just going to print the money.
Yeah.
So the economy, maybe they can make it better, and if they can make it better, it's going to come at the expense of inflation down the road. Now, everyone would say, okay, great, we'll take that now. And from a short-term view, it will be better. And it is, they did do a good job of stopping the financial system from collapsing. Now, having said that, the only reason we got that close to collapse is because no one in the government did their job. The Fed didn't. They printed the money. They didn't have any oversight. The Office of the Control of the Currency, the Office of Thrift Supervision, none of the congressional oversight committees, the SEC, no one did their job. The financial system almost vaporized. They stopped that, and now they're trying to do something about the economy. I just am afraid they can't be too successful on that.
Yeah, you know, just to give you total props and credit here, you know, I just happened to pull up an article that you wrote, and it says, "Face it, the housing bust is here." And did you miss last week's, you know, Fed kind of discussion and all that? And just to let you know, that's dated 8/21/06. So to put this in perspective and make everybody understand that this is not riding the bandwagon, this is a gentleman who's been really ahead of the curve here. And with all due respect, it doesn't mean you're going to be ahead of the curve in the future. Let's kind of state the fact. I mean, I'm not nailing you on that. I'm just saying factually, it's kind of tough right now, as I see it, to see what's going on in the future, because the future is very cloudy. Isn't it more cloudy now than it's been? Don't you think that?
Well, you know, yes. I would say it slightly differently, but I completely agree with you. The future is always cloudy. However, sometimes economic events unfold to where you can say, wow, since we've done this and it's been so severe, whichever thing that is, the outcome is nearly preordained, but you won't know the timing.
Right.
So it was clear that when we had the stock bubble, there would be a bust. It was even more clear than when we had the real estate credit bubble, there would be an even more catastrophic bust. However, now it's very difficult to have a really strong opinion because there's a huge undertow from that bust and the fact that people have taken on so much debt and the collapse in the debt structure in the financial institutions. On the other hand, the Fed is going to monetize everything, and they're printing money. We've never seen the government pull out the stops like this, and every other government on the planet is doing the same thing. So you've got these massive stimulative and ultimately inflationary forces. At the same time, you've had a complete collapse in credit, which tends to wreck businesses and drive down prices. And so you've got these huge forces pushing against each other. And to say to you know exactly how that's going to turn out is way above my pay grade.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But what's interesting is, in we're getting the finger pointed at us from China, which rightfully so, I think, by the way, and Putin, which I think he's just topping the bandwagon. Anything to piss on America's parade, he's all happy to do. You know, they've obviously, you know, their economy, and maybe we did hurt them in a way, but differently there, I think, obviously they have much more of a reliance on the commodities. So that's where their problem is, which, and again, it may be because of us, but different than the China situation, where China is much more in bed with us in terms of the treasuries and our intertwined economies. I've been having this vision, and the vision, it goes something like this, that it appears to me that some of the moves that are being made by Geithner in particular with the protectionist style of, Buy America, and that's Obama/Geithner, is very concerning to me, and I think it's a really bad move. But I'm trying to figure out, how do we profit on this? You know, where do we find the opportunity? And I keep coming back to China. I just keep coming back to China. Consumption-based economics, if you will, and just raw power of the people. Markets have sold off, I mean, more than dramatically and much more greater than ours. Whether it's exactly in line right now, or it should be or not, is another discussion. But it would seem to me, if they got protectionist, protectionism also there, nationalism as well, they could be much stronger than we can be in driving up their markets, particularly if they don't spend their money outward and they just keep their money in-house. Does that make any sense?
I agree with every word you said.
Really? Oh.
And in addition
okay.
to that, I was recently in China. I was invited to come over and make a couple speeches, and one to the Chinese Banking Regulatory Commission. And I spent a week there, and I was just totally impressed. you know, they didn't have the same consumer spending binge with leverage that we did. People still pay cash. They have some debit cards, but the abuse of credit hasn't really occurred, has not occurred there. The banks are in better shape than ours, and they have their problems. I mean, they've made their pact with the devil, namely us, and are dependent on us and own a lot of dollars and things, but they are also in charge of their own destiny. They've got a $2 trillion piggy bank. So they are going through a recession, such as happened here in America. It happens in capitalism all the time. The boom causes the bust, and the bust sets up for the next boom. And that's what China is. They're in control of their own destiny. We, on the other hand, are not. And so a way to profit is to look towards China, to try to find ways to invest in China. They will be able to come out of this before we will, in my opinion. They have their issues and warts, but that always happens. You know, I mean, that there's always problems. And but I think that they are going to be the leaders, and maybe some other Asian countries as well.
Right. Yeah, I agree. What would be, without going, let's not invest particularly in any companies, but let's just go broad.
I don't know any. I couldn't give you any to pick any. I haven't figured any out yet, but I just think that's the right idea.
Okay, so we're on both. I mean, I've been looking at the Shenzhen and the 300 index, which is hard to find. The FXI ETF and a few others, but I'm getting closer and closer. You know how that goes, right? You put all the pieces together as you're forming an investment thesis, and each one falls, until, you know, I always find, okay, find me something, all the wrong things. And if I can't find any more wrong things, that means everything's kind of right, and then try to topple those all over. And All right, so China. Good.
I agree.
All right, so good. So let's talk about this whole banking issue, the good bank. Well, you know what? I'm going to ask you something first. So you ran a short only fund for a long time, many, many years, and obviously, if not before, but recently, you've done well with that. But you decided recently to shut that down, which is kind of interesting. And to do more of a an open, flexible, do anything I want to do kind of fund, let's call it that. Should I take that as a sign that you don't think there's good shorting opportunities, or should I take it as a sign that, you know what, we were over here, now we're over here, we're a lot further down than we were. The shorting opportunities may occur, but at the same time, there may be much greater long opportunities moving forward. Is that kind of summarize it?
Yeah, the latter. I set up the short fund 13 years ago. I was too early because I thought that the Fed policies were going to lead to big problems, and I thought that people's attitudes towards risk were changing in a way that was going to be making it impossible for a professional to manage risk for the people that gave you the money. Now, it got, you know, 100 times more intense than I ever guessed, and I was way early, but in the end, now this collapse has shown people what risk is all about, and I think if you're a professional and people give you money, they're going to let you do your job. As long as you have some sane policies, I think. And so now, but now we've got a change. The government's totally changed in terms of our movement towards, you know, socializing everything and printing money. And given this collapse and the change in attitudes, I don't want to have the job of having to make money on the short side anymore.
Right.
I need flexibility because there's not as much room on the downside, even though there's still plenty in certain areas, and there's opportunities on the upside. And with all this money printing and things like that, and opportunities I see, I just no longer feel like I want to be in charge. I want to try to capitalize on the downside for folks. I mean,
but you know what? The truth of the matter is that if you do I'm using a very layman word here, but you know, a do anything I want to do kind of strategy, that means you could theoretically be completely short. If you wanted to.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So.
Sure, but it just doesn't mean, like, for instance, if I was still, you know, I mean, I've still got my fund open for another couple of months while I'm closing it down, but if I was in, if the people had the understanding they had before, they'd be expecting me to make money while the market's down this year. Well, you know, I don't have any shorts, and I'm long gold, and I'm long gold stocks, and even though I'm up slightly on the year, I might not be. I wouldn't feel comfortable being short because I don't want to be short right now. So I think it's the wrong time to be short for a variety of reasons. So I just don't want the mission of, hey, just capture the downside for us, you know?
Right. No, I think that short. I agree with you. Short for short sake. I think short for hedging sake is really more appropriate for right now. You know, I mean, to short for protection rather than short for profit. If that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, there's going to be the market's not done going down, so there's going to be some big opportunities on the downside. But
well, I think we're setting ourselves up right now, right? Aren't we setting ourselves up right now in the whole next few weeks in the Senate? You know, we have a lot of things going on. Car companies still don't have any money. Oil is still all over the place. Gosh knows who's going to start pointing fingers and getting all mad with us next. Then we have on top, you know, and I'm wondering where we're going to get. By the way, where are we going to get our money to fund this $850 billion monstrosity? Weren't we supposed to get it from China?
They're just going to print it.
But we were supposed to get it from China, right? I mean, that was the plan.
Yeah, maybe, but we're just going to print it.
And then what happens? You know, fast forward a decade.
Eventually, the dollar will start to weaken. Whether it weakens against which other currencies, I can't tell you right now, or whether it just weakens against goods and services or against gold as it's doing right now. I mean, I'm long gold and I'm long gold stocks because it seems to me that that's the most obvious outcome out of all this. And then eventually when the dollar starts to weaken and people don't want to buy our bonds because the currency's weak and the yield's no good and the Fed starts to buy them, I mean, it's going to be a huge problem.
Yeah.
A huge problem. So, it's not today's problem, but it's definitely coming, I believe.
It's a problem for all of us. So your outlook is negative. Do you think that the current... aside from that, we're going to have to print money for this, but do you think that the current plan and its current incarnation, which has been totally bastardized already from what it was supposed to be, this FDR New Deal kind of thing, do you think it's going to not work? I mean, does it even have a chance here? I mean, it looks pretty ugly.
I don't think it's going to do all that much. I've not been very impressed with what I've read. And obviously, it's not final law yet, so maybe it can still change, but so far it doesn't look very promising.
Yeah, I think it's pretty disappointing. I mean, I was really hoping for a little bit more here, but... what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, I think George Bush could have crafted this plan. I mean,
yep.
You know, there's no real change here.
Yeah, and that's not a nice statement. All right. So you're called a contrarian. Truth be known, you're not really the contrarian anymore, are you? You're the voice of reason. You know, because you can.
Well, I'm flattered. I'll take that handle.
You know, MSN Money. You write a weekly. I think it's a weekly article, right? Called Contrarian Chronicles. So, if you were to pick one area of like that you just love, and one area that you just despise right now, thinking, boy, that's going to be disastrous. You know, what is that?
Well, I really like gold and silver and, yep, and precious metal stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you like the miners, by the way? You like the miners, or you like the GLD, or what do you like?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Okay.
Gold and the miners. Miners.
And what about domestic or Canadian or everywhere? Just everything. Grab everything you can.
No, it makes a difference which names you pick and where their assets are.
Okay.
Like Barrick?
You like...
I prefer Agnico Eagle and Goldcorp, Newmont. I think those are all pretty good ideas.
Okay.
And I think that the easiest thing to hate is the Treasury bonds, but I think I'm not short them, but I think that there's no way the interest rates don't rise at some point.
Yeah.
I think that there's going to be a lot. We have to see whenever the rally's going to end, but to decide what to sell. I think, you know, there's a lot of places where there's going to be pressure. There's going to be pressure in these commercial real estate REITs and retail. I mean, there's going to be a pressure across the board. I don't have a favorite area to hate right now because I'm not short, but I do have a favorite area to love, and that's gold.
I tell you something. We're short, or we're long, the short, however you want to call this. The TBT, we did this about 4 weeks ago when we actually swapped from an AGG standpoint on the ETFs because, you know, one of the best ways to do this is through ETFs, I find. And we went to a double short on the TBT, the Treasury, the long Treasury, because it was one of those staring me in the face saying, that can't be right. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't make any sense at all. You know,
yeah, in the long run, rates are definitely going higher here.
Right. So we went there. I think we have like a 26% profit in that period of time. It's pretty
well done.
Yeah. No. Thanks. I mean,
well done.
But no, that's been moving very well. And I still think that's a great play, by the way. And I think we're both saying the same thing. Okay. So finally, I do wonder about oil. Have we always shot on the oil on the downside? It seems pretty absurd where we are at this point.
You know, gun to my head, I guess oil probably is going to go higher from here. Mostly I say that because the out months, you know, for next January, February, and those kinds of dates, the price is $60.
Right.
Or 50s.
Right.
So I kind of friendly towards oil. I don't have a big opinion about it because I know there's a lot I don't know about it. But if I had to guess, I'd guess oil's got a better chance to work $10 or $15 higher than $10 or $15 lower.
I hear you. All right. Well, I'm going to make sure that we put a link to not only your book, which is a great book, The Greenspan Bubble. You can write the next one, The Bernanke Bust or something. Got that? No,
that's my only. I wrote my one book. I'm done.
Yeah, I have one. I have another deal sitting on my table right now for another book, and I just I don't know if I can bring myself to do it.
Don't do it.
I know. I know. It almost ended like in a divorce and multiple homicides. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do know exactly what you mean.
But well, I'll point everybody over to you over there to buy your one book, which will, of course, if you buy it and he's not going to write a new one, think about it. You have a collector's piece if you think about it for a moment.
There you go. Collector's
right?
item.
Right, exactly. Right. And
Somebody sent me something a month. My book sells used on Amazon for, call it, $13 or $14, whereas Woodward's Maestro book on was selling for one penny.
Oh, really?
Maestro book about Greenspan, I should point out,
for those
who don't know.
Right, no, right, absolutely. But anyway, thanks for joining us. We'll have you on again soon,
right.
And we'll point everybody to you. And then when you do open your fund, maybe you can shoot us some information over, and we can kind of point some people over that direction for you.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 94. Thanks again for joining me. Next week, we have Fausto Puglisi, the trader, the day trader, talking to us how to make your days pay. That's his favorite line. I love when he says that. And talking to us, hopefully, about some nuances in the business and maybe some ways that we can pick up on, I was thinking that, you know, with all the jobs and the issues that are going out right now and unemployment, what a great way to potentially, you got to be careful here, but to potentially get involved in managing your own destiny and your own future is to do a little bit of trading and to be carefully to make some money for yourselves. But anyway, we'll bring him on next week and see what he has to say about that, making sure that we do stay within some very important risk parameters, not betting the farm, the house, or the 401k on any of that, of course. Until next time, I appreciate that you are here as a subscriber to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Keep those emails coming. And make sure to stay safe, and we'll do our best to make you some money in the near future. Thanks a lot again. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.